Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason. This is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. Joining me once again for his quarterly appearance on this very podcast, Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics, as we talk about the last quarter of AEW business. Call it the AEW Investors Call. Call it the AEW Quarterly Business Check-In Review, whatever you want to call it. Brandon and I talk all about October, November, and December in the world of AEW from a financial standpoint, given everything that we know and some speculation. We go into some tangents and things like that. I have a hot take on the future of AEW Collision. We'll chat more about that on the show. And yeah, we expect to go about a little over an hour and turn out to be closer to an hour 40. So a lot of kind of like interesting side roads and all that as these conversations usually take. So let's get right to it. Myself and Brandon Thurston talking about the final quarter, 2025 AEW business on Josh Nason's Punch Out. A note, this was recorded on Friday, I almost said October, Friday, January 9th. So a Buffalo Bills, Jacksonville Jaguars discussion is certainly those questions have an answer now. Sorry, TK, but go Patriots. All right, Josh Nason's Punch Out. Let's go right now.
Welcome to the AEW Investors Call. As a reminder, all lines are muted. If you would like to ask a question, please click star 69 on your telephone. I will now turn the call over to Josh Nason of Wrestling Observer and Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics. Please go ahead, Josh.
Well, it is the first part of January 2026. However, we can't let go of 2025 just yet. You know, everyone's rushing to the future. I say let's stay in the past. And my guest, I bet he would agree. The past is so much better.
It was better before.
The past is prologue. Everything's better before. Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics has returned for his quarterly stop in here to this very show, talk about AEW business stuff, metrics and all that for the previous quarter. May talk about the year and all that, but yeah, it's his first appearance of this year, and then yeah, well, four appearances per quarter. That make a lot of sense. If you're new here, we talk all about the numbers that we do know, because AEW, of course, is not a publicly traded company. They are in business with a publicly traded company that may or may be bought by another publicly traded company coming up in perhaps a year or less, could be a year or more. Who knows? Lawyers and all the good stuff get involved. They do not want the Ellison's money. That's for damn sure. No, WBD does not.
That's right. So it's an inferior offer.
Yeah, they don't like it. They don't like the funding, don't like all those aspects, and, you know, Big Zaz. Big Zaz run the ship. TK's best friend, Mr. Zasloff, is he's doing what he wants to do.
There might be litigation resulting from that potential transaction.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. And of course, I was watching some Pollock and Thurston. One of my favorite bits, and I should say, as I mentioned, we're doing this via audio. You and I are wearing different color shirts, not the post-wrestling WrestleNomics Pollock and Thurston uniform of the light blue button-up. Nope. And I will say I did laugh. I always laugh now. The
this meeting is being recorded. Hello?
Yes. What does this mean for AEW?
Yes.
Yes, the music.
There was a delay or some tech issue. Yes. I mean, that's why we're doing this, right? Because this is what people want to talk about. It's what gets people's attention. I'll let you into some analytics inside the WrestleNomics world. Is like the most viewed ratings reports by far are the Dynamite reports. Some of my leading search terms, AEW Dynamite, ratings. Why do people care so much about the AEW Dynamite ratings above all the others? Why are they not interested in NXT ratings, Raw ratings, SmackDown ratings to the same extent? W has a much higher profile. There's so much AEW business anxiety.
What does this mean for AEW? And we'll talk about what it means for AEW right about now. So let's start with the big headlines. And there wasn't a ton, but these ones are big. Obviously, the new Nielsen ratings method, and that was a big discussion during this 3 months, and we learned it did not include HBO Max streaming data. And of course, the big thing is how many people watch an HBO Max. We have no idea.
No idea. Only Mr. Zaslav knows.
Only Mr. Zaslav. I will say, and I'm actually going to have a column about this at some point, it is, when you compare the two relationships between WWE and Netflix and WWD and AEW, WWD, for all this money they're paying, does not really, it makes it very hard for them to find them in the HBO app. And overall, just, it does not feel as synergistic as Tony Khan would have you think. Obviously, he likes the money he's getting. But I just look at just these integrations and all this, and it just is something that's kind of sticking out to me of just the, they should be doing a little bit more. And again, I look at the how hard it is to find AEW Dynamite and Collision on Max easily. You can't keep it as a series. You can't add to your list. You can add individual episodes. It's just very difficult to find, and it shouldn't be. So,
well, I mean, AEW is they need WBD much more than WBD needs AEW. That's for sure. There's probably a little bit of entangled identity, though. If, let's speak conditionally, if WBD owns a minority stake in AEW, so there's that incentive for WBD. But, you know, it's rare that WBD mentions AEW, but it's not surprising. They've got a lot of other things going on.
Yeah, so does Netflix. And Netflix still features Raw very prominently. And I don't know, just more of a, from a user perspective and all this, and for the stumble upon factor.
Well, this would be a controversial view for some people, but Raw is a bigger show than Dynamite.
I mean, I can't believe you just said that. I mean, I incendiary comments, but yes, it is much more well known. Anyway, also the big headlines this month, WBD putting itself up for sale again. What does this mean for AEW? We are not going to know for a very long time. And I also mentioned TV holiday scheduling hell, or was it? Because I tell you what, I don't love Christmas and New Year's and everything being on midweek. It screws everything up, everything for everybody. I have time off and so on. I enjoy a little bit of extra time, but it is really hard to book podcast guests. I'll tell you that much. It's tough to do that. But also to watch pro wrestling. It was this year, AEW.
Who wants to do that?
I know. They had Dynamite on Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving was on a Thursday again. We had, we had Christmas Collision. We had the Dynamite at 34th Street, and we had New Year's Smash. And it's just these back-to-back-to-back holidays. And it was some of their bigger shows, or from the in-ring standpoint, some of their most important bigger shows of the year. And I think Tony Khan, I mean, he's just kind of speaking this into existence, but he really likes it. And I think he thinks that there's a holiday, something to take advantage of by having AEW on these holidays. And we saw some of the numbers. We haven't seen some of the other numbers that haven't come out.
It's funny, like us grew up reading The Observer. And The Observer taught us that Thanksgiving is a big historical, maybe not today, but is a big historical wrestling day, and Christmas as well. In the 80s anyway, 70s. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see. I'm very interested to see what happens in a couple of years, because Christmas is on a Saturday.
Oh.
And it depends on World's End. He really likes having World's End at that last week of December. So he's either going to have to run it in 2027. He's either going to have to run it on New Year's Day, or he's going to have to run it on Christmas if he's going to do that Saturday, because he's not going to go against the NFL. He's not going to change course there. I'm fascinated to see what he does. And next year,
Chris Did you ask him about this, whether he would challenge the sickos to watch wrestling on a major holiday?
And he didn't. He didn't take the bait. I asked him a follow-up question about something else I was much more interested in when it came to free agents. But you would think I was hoping he would be like, I don't know. I was hoping he'd kind of acknowledge it. But the fact he didn't, either he hasn't looked that far ahead, which is possible, or he's like, yeah, I'm going to run this thing on Christmas and see what happens. The also fascinating thing about this is that could be, dun, 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 that could be the last month of the WBD deal if they don't pick up the option, work out a new, contract or something like that. So imagine that Christmas, the final month on WBD, and having a pay-per-view on Christmas. Can you imagine?
No, not a pay-per-view. I don't think you would do a pay-per-view. And your partners would weigh in on that too. So even if you wanted to do, Star Wars, which they probably don't have the rights to use, but you know what I'm saying? Even if they wanted to run on December 25th or whatever day Thanksgiving is on next year, partners might have a lot to say about that.
Yes. All right, let's go to the medium headlines. And this is pretty much everything else in medium and small headlines. Company celebrates 6 years. I know a lot of people probably surprised that's going to happen. They say it's going to end soon. The company and DC Comics announced a new crossover comic book series. And they're Tony Khan won this, of course, with DC Comics. And Tony Khan mentioned this was, I think he said, the most important partnership they have had to date. So there's that with DC. I don't really know why. He didn't really explain that. I guess from an IP perspective, but it wasn't, I don't really think it was that big of a deal. I assume they're not really getting any money for this, or if they did, it might've been kind of minimal. So I would take the money first, but who knows? They announced they were doing the residencies again, Texas. They're currently in for Arlington. So that relationship continues. They announced a partnership with Blacksmith Apparel. They announced a partnership with White Castle again for this new combo. And again, no financial details disclosed. Their first ever craft beer partnership, World's End, which is Bell's Two Hearted IPA. So they're starting to do the thing where they're presenting shows via some of these sponsors, at least in the case with Bell's Two Hearted. White Castle, you have to go in and get this combo. So I assume there must be, I think this is like the third or so White Castle thing that they've done. So I assume it's doing well. And I don't know kind of what the exchange of money is, if there's anything, and they don't really talk about this. It's not like White Castle is a prominent, it's not like an all-encompassing deal like WWE is doing like with RAM or TKO is doing with RAM and some of these other entities. It's not like you see White Castle on the mats or anything like that. Bell's Two Hearted, you did. Revolution announced to be returning to LA. Dynasty heading to Vancouver, Canada. So we have the first two pay-per-views of next year, March and April, all set. This enterprising young reporter revealed the actual attendance for AEW All in Texas. Why is that in here? Because some of the money, the state reimbursement was reduced for tax purposes that AEW had put in for. And, of course, you can read about that on WrestleNomics. They decided to move Collision up on to avoid going head-to-head with Saturday night's main event. This was a weird one. I didn't realize they had a facility or something in Florida. They had a training ring there.
Secret training facility?
I guess so. And they moved it to Nashville, which I thought was odd because there
That's
was
where the production facility is, right? They have some sort of production. That's where I think yeah.
Okay, that makes more sense. Because past couple of years, it's been talked that AEW is going to do something with IP, oh, yeah. Offense. Oh, no.
Whoa.
Adam Copeland. Oh, boy. I'm screwing up all of
it. He's Adam Copeland again, right?
Yeah, I need to cope. Yes, Adam Copeland and Christian, they live in Asheville, that being in North Carolina. So Nashville kind of threw me off there. The company just said, we're going to create a national title, despite the fact that the NWA already
had Nashville
one.
Title?
No, I wish. A national title. And they split the unified title. Again, they crowned two new champions, Ring of Honor Women's Pure and AEW Women's Tag Team title. So I put this in here because belt sales are all the rage. So I don't really
just
know.
Like, this is the same title that Georgia Championship Wrestling defended throughout its history. It's great history on TBS.
I mean, I do believe so. But I believe the NWA national title, apparently that lineage doesn't count, even though that goes back. It might be an upside down type thing. I'm not really sure.
Certain wrestlers in NBA were not happy about this.
No,
I don't know if I'm supposed to jump in and talk about this stuff yet. But there was a a trademark dispute about this.
There was. We'll talk about that during the trademark section here. All the people are jumping ship, Brandon. Their live events marketing director announced his departure from the company. So that position is open. I believe they filled it as of yet. There are some people also wondering, where's Koshy Erbe? Like, is he still with the company? I haven't heard from him. He's still with the company. He's still posting about different shows they're doing and all that. And so he's still with there, verified on LinkedIn and also in X as well. Grand Slam Mexico is happening again in 2026. So that relationship, I don't think it was a big surprise about that. Tony Khan confirmed that. Daly's Place, a safe harbor for AEW during the pandemic era, closing for several years due to massive. Several years. Could be up to three. They're building this massive, they're trying to attach it onto the Jacksonville Jaguars stadium, and they're doing big renovations there. That's actually going to put the Jaguars team for a season in Orlando, Florida, at the same stadium where WWE has held WrestleMania. So an affront to AEW and AEW in all aspects. So that will be happening. And let's see what else. And so being also, I put in here being a good partner for CMLL. So I mentioned this because I saw this posted by Lucha Blog on X. And I had not noticed it, but he had, of course, being a Lucha expert as he is, that every time that AAA is running a big show in Mexico, and CMLL is also running a show the same weekend, AEW has been sending talent down there. And there's coming up in mid-January, actually, I think next weekend, there's a big AAA show, and then Ricochet and some other AEW talents are going down there. So it's interesting, in thinking about partnerships and you think about relationships and money and all these things, and how
it's aggressive behavior, isn't it? You're sending your talent down there to compete against WWE and AAA.
I mean, if I'm WWE, I'd be upset. You know, like, it's not fair to them to have this competition. It's not good, especially someone that does not like WWE, like Ricochet. You know,
so, if I was WWE, I would not like AEW.
Yes, I'd be upset. Very upset about this. And so I mean, just thinking like with New Japan, they send Okada over and so on. But CMLL, they seem to be really, there's a regular talent exchange. And it's just kind of, it's interesting where they're kind of leaning towards and so on with some of these partnerships and so on. I mean, I assume the New Japan relationship is still pretty strong. I didn't buy that WWE was going to send Nakamura to New Japan. I didn't buy that for a second for Tanahashi's last match. But I'd be interested to see in the year ahead how the New Japan and AEW relationship goes and for this year's Forbidden Door. But the CMLL one seems to be really strong. I think a lot of that this year is because of that AAA-WWE relationship.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, we should, don't ask Yota Tsuji about how the relationship is going with New Japan and AEW.
Yeah.
I guess New Japan isn't like embattled to the extent that, I mean, embattled is probably not the right word, but like there isn't another Japanese company that's nipping at New Japan's heels like there is for CMLL and Triple A are quite competitive, right? So I guess, you can make the argument that CMLL, that's a good a good set of guest talent that you can have come in and help you out with this more competitive situation, whereas New Japan's issues are more internal, I guess.
Yeah, I would say so. And there's been of course so many things said and written about the state of New Japan when it comes to post Wrestle Kingdom. Now Tanahashi's done, so yeah. Well, I think they've been in different forms of trouble for several years, and their fan base is not really happy with how things are going, and they'll ever get. I think post pandemic, I think they have. I don't think I know they have struggled. I think more than most organizations, and everyone else seems to have rebounded, kind of come back, but they seem to be the ones that really are just really kind of taking it. I don't know. It's interesting. Like if they were to come up for market, would Tony Khan be interested in buying them? Would that be financially reasonable? I don't know. I'd assume he would do everything he could to avoid it going into, WWE's hands, who I'm sure would be very interested in acquiring it. If TKO was open for that, I'm sure they would if they felt it would get a financial stronghold over there. But I don't know.
I can see the Yota Tsuji point, which I assume is his legitimate feelings to at least some extent, that when you have this company that has taken a lot of your talent, Okada, Will Ospreay, Kenny Omega, Shibata, not that Shibata was in the greatest shape. What's the benefit at this point? Is it a net positive for them? I think it's up for debate at the very least. And that if they were on their own, without the AEW involvement, they might be better off.
This topic came up during my year in review series. The argument doesn't make sense. It's not like Tony Khan is putting a gun to these guys' head and saying you have to sign. A lot of them want to come and work for them, and it's
on the management, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's easy to blame AEW, but free agents come available, and are they not supposed to make an offer if they don't want it's kind of one of those things where, what else, you know, what does he expect them to do? Not take them, and then they make less money, or they go to WWE. It should be more focused on what is New Japan doing versus why is AEW taking all these talents. And at some point, you know, neither group is going to be able to take everyone. These rosters are overloaded as it is. And how many people realistically can AEW take or WWE take for? It's like they're doing what Nick Khan said they don't do. They're benching people, right? And that's just becomes a whole thing. So, So there's media headlines. All right, let's go to ticketed events for the quarter. So I had 25. I had Wrestle Dream in St. Louis, which had a attendance of 6,923. I believe this is a WrestleTix number. I'm not sure. The gate, which was not released, and Dave Meltzer estimated between 115 and 125,000 buys about a week after the show. Full gear in Newark, New Jersey, 10,485 gate. I estimated, you know, based on that, around like $1 million. I think is they never really officially announced that. I think if you do $100 per head, you minus out 5% comps or something like that. Even if you had 1,000, I think you're floating around that million mark, which they've pretty consistently done there in Newark. And then they had about 140,000 buys. World's End in Chicago. Tony Khan, he called it a clean sellout, 8,968, 140,000 buys. A clean sellout, I assume in this case he means legitimately no tickets left, minus some singles and things like that. Not a made-up number. Like, even with production, there's no way to do that. There's always a few seats available. You know, when we were when I was working in hockey, we would sell out for almost 10,000. There's always going to be some singles. You're not going to say, but you're not going to say it's not a sellout over five single seats. You know, it's just not. So
I think even more so in a wrestling situation where your configuration, this is not a building that you run 100 times a year. Your configuration gets finalized as you bring it, as you load in probably, and that, now we know we can actually make these available or not.
Yeah. It's why those smaller sets are always a wise investment. You know, the ones that aren't so big, but you have, more video boards on the side. WWE does this a lot, and AEW started doing this a lot, like with All In and other shows. You have those smaller sets. It just allows you way more flexibility where it's almost like the bigger set can help cover up for low ticket sales and one area you don't have to sell. But if you have a really hot product like WWE does, just try to do that in the round as much as you can. And that's another good indication of how sales are doing, how many people you want to pack in there. Of course, there's Ring of Honor Final Battle at GalaxyCon in Columbus, Ohio. No attendance or gate released for this. I've seen estimates anywhere from 500 to maybe 1,000 people, depending on this kind of venue that they have there. I had 14 Dynamites, 7 Collisions. They had a couple 3-hour shows in there as far as separate collisions. And then we had total TV broadcast 30. I had 14 Dynamites, 14 Collisions. Now, this is unique. I spent a more time than usual because they had some that were 1-hour episodes. Some they included as in those 3-hour blocks. They say 2 for Dynamite, 1 for Collision. And I also had 2 Tailgate Brawl episodes. Interestingly enough, no Tailgate Brawl on this past month's World's End. They just simply went back to the 0-hour. And it was not on HBO Max or TNT. So I thought that was interesting. So, and linear TV hours, I had 54 for the quarter. So that was that. Any stats or anything you want to talk about now at this point?
Our number of events checked out. I forgot to share with you the slides here.
I thought that was intentional. Like you just were like, no, this is proprietary.
No, this is not proprietary information. All this information is available publicly. This is just an aggregation of public information. Our live event numbers check out. So in terms of the count of number of events, what do we have here? The Dynamite number, I think, is the most meaningful in terms of if you're trying to get a reflection of the popularity. We can talk about venues if you want to get into caveats, but Q4, this is actually multiple items. So I'm going to have to go back to the spreadsheet. I think it was down, but let me get back to now. Can you see my screen?
I can. It's small. It's
We want to look at only Q4. Actually, no,
much better. I just, yeah, good to go now.
Anyway, 3,300 is the average Dynamite tickets distributed. That is actually up from the Q4 of last year of 3,100. Collision only slightly down, about 2,000 in this year's Q4 versus 2,100. In last year's Q4, and pay-per-view is exactly the same. So there you have it. You're not seeing the Excel spreadsheet. You're seeing the PDF still, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at the Excel spreadsheet that has the things that I'm reading from. So,
So year to year was the same.
Virtually. Yes.
Yeah. Interesting. Huh? So yeah, so I'm looking over this. Yeah, that's, I mean, it's always a good sign if you don't go down, obviously. They stayed consistent. And they also had, yeah, they had, what was the total events? Was the total events comparable from year to year?
Wait a minute. Let me refresh. No, that's right. The number of events for Dynamite in this Q4 was 14 versus 13 last year.
Yeah.
Fewer collisions, 7 versus 9. Okay. And 3 pay-per-views in both quarters.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Huh.
I don't know what these charts are doing, though. I'll have to fix those. But I think this is right.
Huh. Well, I mean, that shows consistency. They're good. They close well, I guess.
And it's plateauing.
Yes. Yeah, better than sinking. That's true. Yeah. They still, they're still a far ways off from that, 2023. We're kind of looking at these 3-year snapshots. Dynamite was, 4,500. Collision was 3.4. And, their pay-per-view is about 1,000 more. So that's notable, but yeah, it's certainly not not a huge dip down.
Yeah.
So pay-per-view buys for the year estimated. This is, so I went through Dave's estimates, and again, what he does not do, and perhaps one of these days I can try to talk him into doing this. I always, he puts out a range of estimate range about a week after in the Observer newsletter. But he never goes back and actually like a month later says,
have you seen his spreadsheet? Can you get him to share his spreadsheet?
I know. I should. I don't know if he – it might be written down somewhere in his office, so it might be hard to find. I'll tell you that much. But he – it would be nice if he actually got a final, final number. But the fact that these numbers are never – this range is never disputed, I don't think he's just coming up with it out of thin air. So I think that says something, because if these numbers – these numbers are out there and so on – if they were that far off from what the numbers really were, I would think that, their pay-per-view partners and, WBD would probably want to know that. So, but I had for the year, I had the high end total buys estimate for 1.25 million and the low end total buys estimate for about 1.19. So right in that range of anywhere between, 1.19 and 1.25. So how much do you figure on for how much revenue AEW gets per pay-per-view is, again, because there's,
I'm so glad you asked that.
Good. Cause I was thinking about this today, because you have HBO Max if you have a subscription, you get them for 40. How much that money do they get back? You have Triller, you have pay-per-view.com, you have YouTube, linear providers who traditionally, take their, it's so fascinating to know what is the average of what they get, but let's see what
it's guesswork. It's definitely guesswork. But I think you can see my other spreadsheet. Now there are many spreadsheets that go into this whole concoction. So I figured, because it started with All Out, the HBO Max pay-per-view offering, right, which is at $10 fewer. So I don't know. let's figure before the average domestic price was $49.99. Let's say it's $45 now when you mix in HBO Max. And I'm just figuring the average split is $45 in their favor, and the average international split is $40 in their
less
favor.
Less than 50%.
I think so.
You think so? That's interesting because
average.
I wonder what the like what is the what are these providers doing for them that's that significant, I wonder. They're putting out AEW's putting out the product and they're giving this conduit for WBD or Triller or someone to make money. You would think it would be 60 maybe 60% in their favor versus 4. That's kind of what I would think. Especially
because
AEW is covering all the production costs. They're simply saying we're going to make this available to you, you know. I'm curious about that.
I could see the argument being, especially now that it's not exclusive, that there's many competing carriers here, that maybe some are offering a better deal. I don't know. I mean, like the belief in the traditional pay-per-view era was it was 45 in the favor, roughly. I know it's different, but roughly 45. It was not in the favor. I mean, that's why Vince wanted to get off pay-per-view and go it alone, right? Because it was not favorable in terms of percentage split.
I think AEW has to be getting more. Otherwise, they would just try to develop the technology themselves and keep more money. Maybe that's what this watch AEW thing is for. But I think they really like the
Amazon Prime is showing it's not easy.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Yeah. So overall, what we're estimating, your estimated here was a total take for AEW for pay per views for the year, just over 22 million.
Net revenue around 2022. I mean, this is so imprecise. We're doing a lot of guesswork here. More than 20 million. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's consistent with prior years. And we've had discussions about, well, what if they made them not pay-per-views? What if you had to say the acronym AEWPLE and it was on a streaming service? What would it take for them to do that? Something in excess of what they're making on pay-per-view, I suppose, in terms of net revenue, which is around, I think it's fair to estimate is around $20 million. For a year.
Interesting. I think it's more. That's just my gut instinct, but we'll have to see. Maybe I'll do the Tom Cruise Mission Impossible, break in those offices and hover and try to get the files and all that. If that happens, it was not me, everyone. It was not me. Any other before we go on to contracts and all that stuff? Anything else from the spreadsheet which you can get at the PDF rather at
well, you can get the KPIs. You know what I should do, and I've done in prior years, is I published this like revenue estimate. A couple years ago, I did a profitability estimate that was a fodder for many avenues. I did not do that last year. We should discuss today.
Yes.
Profitability, but tickets. I mean, I'm just plugging in $55 average ticket price. For Dynamite, 50 for Collision, 100 for pay-per-views, 100 for All In, and we get to live event revenue of is this in here? Almost $100 million, somewhere probably just under that, I think, for their total annual live event revenue in this era where they're running smaller venues.
And that's based on how many shows?
That is based on a total of
93.
Is that what it said?
Yep.
Yeah.
That was a fast formula you just put in there.
This is what I do. I press equals sum and then I select some cells and
that's
it happens.
Right. Quickest Excel gun in the West. I love it. So we estimated about 114 based on this. Okay.
That's expense. That's if we're trying to think about profitability, which is a dangerous enterprise. But that would be the expense, which is like, I don't know. How much do you think it costs to run a Dynamite?
That's a great question. What was the report you published about the town expense for? Oh my God! What was it? All In? It was
Nevada. Are you talking about the Chris Harrington declaration?
I don't know. That might have been it. Yes, that might have been it.
I don't know if I can pull it up right now.
Yeah, So yeah, you have talent coming in, you have venue rental, you have a marketing production, any of those type of things.
We're saying, what does it cost
trucks
to put this event on? I don't know if you would put marketing in here. Maybe you would. I'm estimating that it's going to cost them about $1 million to run a TV taping.
Got it. Okay.
And a lot more for a pay-per-view, maybe twice as much more for a pay-per-view. And for All In, your biggest show of the year with the stadium and so forth, you know, maybe $4.5 million to run that show. We know, I think I know that WrestleMania is costing, you know, a day of WrestleMania is costing maybe under $10 million to run. I think Nick Khan said as much on a one of his interviews that he did with one of his friends.
Okay. So $114 million in expenses, you think?
Yeah, which is more than I'm saying there isn't ticket revenue here.
Right, that makes sense. So ticket revenue, it says 90.
Fortunately, you have a
Yeah.
TV deal to offset more.
That's true. So obviously their biggest ticket revenue or big, their biggest revenue source is their TV contract, which Tony Khan has mentioned before, and so on. And other ancillary, obviously they have international TV deals, which we don't know about.
No, but I estimate that all out here. We know that the TV deal. Do you want to talk about this now?
Let's
I
do it.
know. I know. We know that the TV deal is worth what? What's the TV deal worth?
Let's see. Year one is it 100? You have here 159. Is that time or was it 185? I think it was like,
Therein lies a question.
yeah. He said, so
According
he said
to
they're getting half a billion from WBD. That's what he said, Tony Khan did.
So, Variety report. I think it was Variety that changed the number that they had in their report.
There's Variety, The Hollywood Reporter, and The Wrap. I'm trying to remember which of those reported the actual numbers.
Well, here's what we've got. 185 is what they've reported, but then Sports Business Journal reported 170. Why the discrepancy?
That is because possible ownership, right? Correct? Buying, investing in the company.
Let's speak in generalities and conditions, right? Like, what if part of this deal is some sort of stock transaction? There's all sorts of complicated stock type transactions. You can make warrants and things like that that I don't even understand well enough at this moment. Maybe that's involved here. And how do you appraise the value of your TV deal if it involves equity of a company that both the parties own? And it becomes quite interpretative, I think. But so yeah, it's a lot of cash, I'm sure, though.
Interesting. Yeah, he keeps saying referring back to half a billion. So it's I think at the 3rd year is at 200, and then is the option at 250 or 225? It's a significant number for that year four that they have to that they renew at. I can't remember what David reported, but it's escaping. It's a substantial jump, which is that's why I'm so curious about. That's why their 2027 is so important, right? Because if you don't have, you have to get, and again, it could be new owners, and really, depending on how this works with the streaming split and the Werner Goebbels or whatever the guy's name is, Werner, what is his name?
Werner Goebbels.
Werner Goebbels. Where did I come up with that? What is the guy's name? Werner
Dave
Goebbels is.
Zaslav, Ted Sarandos,
No,
David Ellison.
who's the CFO? Who is the CFO of WBD? That is
Oh, Gunnar Wiedenfels.
Gunwirefeld, Werner Goebbels. I came up. I had a WB random name generator apparently in my head. That's where I came up with that one. Werner Goebbels. Yeah, but yes. So,
Gunnar
yeah,
Wiedenfels. If Gunnar
Gunnar.
calls you, you're effed. Your
That's right.
project is done.
I've never seen a picture of Gunnar Wiedenfels before. I did not. I picture him being bald with glasses, like
No.
Adam Silver from the WNBA.
So Gunnar is going to be in charge of global networks, and he's going to be in charge of the old assets that aren't going to be. He's going to be in charge of the assets that Netflix is not going to buy.
Correct.
That are going to stay. Gunnar's company is going to stay its own independent, publicly traded company. And in that event, TNT and TBS are not controlled by a W partner
Correct. Correct. But they also get
until they get combined with Comcast and or something. Yeah.
Versant,
Versant, yeah.
something like
If
that.
that happens.
Right. Dun, dun, dun. So, yeah. So I guess we'll definitely see what happens there. What else in your charts here? Was there anything?
What I've plugged in here for the TV
Oh, you're
deal,
talking about TV deals. Correct.
this would
Yes.
be extremely controversial. I'm plugging in 159 million, I guess. That is it. I might be arrested for this, because I think that some of this deal is equity, and I'm not sure how that all works out. But I think there's something, If you take the Sports Business Journal number of 170 to think that, well, maybe that reflects cash or something like that. So it's going to start out a little bit less than 170. So maybe we're around, 160 or something like that in year one. Regardless, they're doing quite well. So Tony had said at 1.2 that 90% of the revenue of the TV revenue is domestic,
right?
Which totally makes sense. So I plugged in a bunch of other numbers I don't think we need to go through to try to estimate what their international deal is, but suffice to say it's less than 10% of their overall media revenue, and we get to an overall almost $175 million in my estimation.
Yeah, at one point I think this might be just Dave talking about the overall number. He said AEW is getting $3.6 million a week from their new deal. And you look around, it's like around $185 million annually, totaling approximately $555 million over 3 years. So again, part of that could be equity.
But 180 divided by 52 is $3.5 million.
There you go. But again, they have to own, if they own a percentage, it has to be less than 10%, correct? Or else they'd have to disclose it in their public docs.
Yes. Or you could have warrants, which is like, I have the option to buy it or something like that.
Okay.
All the stock equity experts can correct me, but it could be something that gives them equity over time. So they don't have it now. So whatever lawsuits AEW's in, they don't have to say that a publicly traded company owns 10% of them because they don't yet, or maybe they, I don't know, that this could be so small, this could be so far under 10% right, to begin with, that they'll never get there.
So what is that? What do you have for total revenue for this year and estimated based on all this?
At this moment, until I change the spreadsheet later, $323 million, which is a lot more than they've made in prior years.
Got it. What's a profit?
I don't know.
Yeah. It's so hard not knowing, but it's, yeah, as you put this, a very detailed spreadsheet.
I took a stab at it.
Yeah.
And since they're profitable, so we have, you know what we have today? Call up Andrew Schleimer. You know what we have?
EBITDA.
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 So, do you know what EBITDA stands for?
Expected. Oh, my God. I should know.
Come on.
I know. Expected.
Shame on you. No, it's not expected. Come on now.
Estimated.
No.
EBITDA. Oh, my God.
Come on.
I'm blanking. What, tip me with it. What is it?
Earnings.
Earnings before depreciation, amortization.
What about the I?
What about
the
it?
T? Earnings before. Oh, no.
Now you're blanking.
Earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization.
Yes, correct.
It's an early form of profitability. It's basically revenue minus operating expenses, as we all know what operating expenses are. They're the, I don't know, they're expenses. But then you should also, think of, then there's net income, which is the most final form of profit. And since they, under my estimation here, would have a positive EBITDA, that, you know what that means? The Internal Revenue Service says, give me some of that. Which was just, if they've not been profitable in prior years, I don't think that they would be paying income taxes like this, but I think that they would be now, and I can tell you my corporate income taxes are around 28%. So and I think that's comparable with what we see for publicly traded companies like WWE and TKO. So you figure they're going to pay some hefty taxes, and then you get down to an estimated net income of maybe around $68 million. But don't run to the aggregators with that. This is not for aggregation.
And not for aggregation. Exactly.
This is not for Jim Cornette's podcast or anything of that nature.
And that's why, when you look at these stories come out, like, oh, they get, X amount, 4 million, whatever it was, from the state of Ohio and some of these other, this is all
tax credits.
All tax credits, right? And WWE and TKO, and they're getting, tax credits from Las Vegas in addition to a site fee and so on. I think a lot of people just got blow through that, but that's millions of dollars that they don't have, they get back, or, that's, especially for AEW, that stuff, definitely matters. So these site fees, but also tax credits are such an important part of this whole process as well. And that's, you're talking about all in to some of the reimbursement they got, because they initially had said, we thought we were going to get X amount of attendance for all in, but it was actually less. And then, so the money that they got back was considerably lower.
Yeah, it
notably
was
lower.
You want me to tell you what that number was?
Yeah. I
could do that. The funding approval was based on an estimated attendance of 33,490, including 32,500 spectators, which was projected in February ahead of the show that happened in July. After the July 12th show, officials submitted documentation certifying actual attendance at 23,759, including 21,973 spectators. And because it was lower than, you know, it was about 22,000 rather than the about, you know, 32,500. They were initially approved for disbursements. Was it tax credits, reimbursements of, I think, just over $1 million. So I could probably follow up and do another records request like 6 months after I published this article, which maybe it's coming up on. So they'll probably get proportionately less, but still, I would estimate around $700,000, which is decent money if you can get it, I guess.
Yeah. For a challenger brand.
Yeah.
You want to go to the ratings numbers from your spreadsheet, your PDF rather, KPIs?
All right. Dynamite ratings were down. Collision ratings were down. What else do you want to know? They averaged in the demo. Keep in mind, this is Big Data Plus panel. 0.15 down from 0.22 last year in the old panel only era. That is a 34% difference. We saw a VMI report a couple months ago looking at most of Q4. Q4 was in the middle of it at that point, and most of these programs were down like 20%, particularly in the demo. How complicated can we make this? So Big Data Plus panel seems to be an externality. HBO Max is another externality that may be cannibalizing viewership to some extent. You can tell yourself a story that 34% can all be accounted for by that.
I think we're not going to know any of this, the impact of any of this, until comes renewal time for everyone, right? I think that's going to be the ultimate arbiter of how seriously they take it, or how just whether this matters. I assume it obviously does. And by that point, you know, we'll have a couple of years of data when it comes into this. And that's just the new, you know, the new reality. But yeah, it was definitely a big story. Did you sit at one point at Christmas with staring at the fire and, you know, glass of brandy or bourbon or something like that? And you just like, you shook your head and said, "God damn, big panel and data." Did you ever say that? Did you say that?
Oh, me?
Yes. Lamenting this change up that we didn't think was going to happen.
I only have nice things to say about Nielsen and everything they do. So,
very true. Was there anything else of note on the PDF?
I'm checking to see if my numbers are actually right here. If we have to correct our deltas, that's even worse.
Oh, wow.
48% in Q4 is the delta. 0.09 versus 0.18 for Dynamite, and a similarly dramatic drop for Collision, 0.05 versus 0.09. So this will all be corrected when it is published for subscribers, these slides here.
What about the ranking?
I don't know, because Programming Insider is all over the place in this quarter by this time. So
gotcha.
I've got a limited timeline of ranking data to talk about, but you know, it's 115 on the week in the demo is where Dynamite lies, which is,
it's lowest ever by far.
Yeah, which is, you know, not as good as 78, number 78 in the year prior, and it's a similar difference for Collision, 186 versus the year prior, 136. So have you seen the Programming Insider puzzles that we've been challenged to decipher lately?
No, I have not.
Okay, we won't get into it then. never mind.
Is it like Wordle, like those type of puzzles? Spelling Bee.
Douglas Pucci, who reports the TV ratings for Programming Insider. I think he's been taking some time off, and the tables are very fragmented and difficult to read at this time.
Oh yes. You talked about this. The giant, basically just dump of data. Yes.
It's a challenge.
Fun stuff. Let's get to some contracts. Money coming in, money coming out. Signings during this quarter. We had Andrade, mm-hmm. Lacey Lane, Haiyan, Maya World, Lena Cross. We learned MVP signed extension, and also Hikaru Shida signed a new deal, however, disappeared. She has not been on TV in like almost a year, I think. So signed a new deal and is not being used. So how about that? Departures, also Andrade. He appeared and then disappeared because of a not-so-non-compete or a true non-compete. Why you didn't think existed. We'll talk about that in a minute. Tony Chimmel, formerly of WWE fame, we learned he was still with the company. And a lot of people were surprised he was with the company at all. And I remember, I've not thought of him in years. I remember seeing him at an AEW show. I cannot remember if it was in Boston or if it was in Newark. But I remember seeing him and people are saying like,
what was he doing? He wasn't working as a ring announcer, right?
No, he was just walking around doing whatever on the floor. And I think it was Boston because I remember someone saying, is that Tony Chimmel? And I'm like, oh, yeah, it is. And so I guess he was just doing stuff with them. But I don't think he ever did a ring announcing thing for them. And also departure, RJ City's Hey W series. I guess that's how you pronounce it on YouTube. So,
I always thought it was Hey Ew.
That's who I thought it was. Maybe it is. I've only seen it once, and that was the last episode, so that's on me. But maybe it is Hey Ooh, but then I was like, is it
Hey
EW? But yeah.
That doesn't make sense.
It could be either. Other contracts, developments, and so on, things we always like to learn. Brody Lee Jr., he can sign a full deal when he's 18. He revealed that as well. But he also has to take on Jon Moxley in a death match when he's 18. So he's got those choices coming up. Eddie Kingston under a six-year deal, very similar to the Dustin Rhodes six-year deal. However, when it comes to his 30-year mark in wrestling, he's retiring. He is done.
Okay.
And then Danhausen's AEW contract finally set to expire early next year. We had some returns, two big players in Swerve.
Royal Rumble. He's available for the Royal Rumble.
He is, but I read that there's a split. The camps are split as whether or not to bring him into the World Wrestling Federation.
What? But,
yes. Some people think they should. Some people think they don't. I guess we'll find out how much influence Phillip Brooks has. Maybe he said, I'll go to Saudi, but you got to bring in my buddy to come in, work some NXT dates. Maybe Evolve or something. Who knows?
Okay.
Who knows? Former guest on this show. Swerve Strickland, MJF, Mark Davis, Red Velvet, and Ortiz all made their returns. During the quarter, we also had some injuries. So HR is going to have to be paying out some insurance claims. Taz getting a shoulder replacement to go with two new knees. Kota Ibushi suffering a terrible leg injury. Queen Aminata, Roosh, Jalisco always seem to get injured at the same time. It's very weird how that works. Penelope Ford, Layla Gray.
And are you insinuating something?
I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying it's a correlating factor. You know, it's a correlating factor. Debuts. Sari from a debut in Ring of Honor. Zeta Steel in Ring of Honor. El Clone, who actually debuted in TV, but did not actually make his in-ring debut until January. A fact I realized when I was writing the story, and then after I'm like, wait a minute, why did they say it's his debut? I thought he was returning on AEW Collision. No, it was actually his first match, despite being there for like 3 months. I include this in here because they, you know, with influencers are all the rage now.
This is very controversial.
In pro wrestling. Mm-hmm. And obviously with UFC has gone this playbook, WWE has gone this playbook. Mm-hmm. And if you notice, you're watching the AAA, or as John Pollock pronounced it, AAA.
AAA, yeah.
They're going in this playbook as well. A lot of Latino influencers they show on the broadcast and such.
Mm-hmm. And why is he an ex-Try Guy? What's the story with that?
I've never heard the Try Guys in my life at all. I've heard of Fry Guys, but not the Try Guys. And my good friend and lead editor Joe Currier said, I'll do something on this. I'm like, who are these people? He's like, there's social media people that, I don't know if they do YouTube stunts or something like that. A guy named Ned Fulmer of the Try Guys, who's not in the Try Guys anymore, made his wrestling debut at AEW TV.
Did he wrestle?
Yes, he made his in-ring debut. This is in a dark match.
Okay. So I don't watch the Try Guys, but someone in my household does.
They're known for testing a wide range of activities, such as testing their sperm count, raising toddlers, shaving their legs, and wearing women's underwear. All right.
So he was a part of this. I wonder if Wikipedia will tell us exactly what happened. I'll have to recount it from memory because I've been briefed on this. So Ned was always known for. So yeah, these are these guys who like they have their YouTubers, like they're very famous YouTube people, and they try things, I think, and they're very funny and millennial. And Ned was known for, you know, for being the guy who loves his wife. And I guess he had a, an extramarital relationship, as it turned out, not with his wife, but with someone else who was working with them. So he was separated from the company.
I see.
Is my understanding of the matter.
Yeah,
well, a controversial figure in a, the online world.
I see. Well, he made his debut, and was a the tree in the forest type thing. He made his debut, and nobody talked about it. The only reason I knew about this is because it was my guy Joe. That was it. So yeah, they lean into very strange celebrities. Olympia from CMLL, Nixon Newell, we'll get to her in a minute, made her debut, and Stephen Borden, aka Lil Sting, one of the Stinger's sons,
Sting Jr.
That's right. We talked about trademarks. Fire, Blitz, Tidal Wave, Firestorm, and Watch AEW. Shockwave, not so much, not anymore. It was dropped, you report this, it was either dropped or abandoned, correct? The AEW claim?
So, this is a, yes. AEW tried to trademark AEW Shockwave as a name that they had not used yet for a potential new program.
On Fox.
Much speculation that that was going to be a new program on Fox, which obviously has not materialized. This happened in September 2024. NWA got wind of this and said, wait a minute, we did NWA Shockwave in like December 2020 or something. And so they filed an opposition. These trademark oppositions happen all the time. This is not, I could see Tony Khan not being aware of that. That and the NWA had filed an opposition to their trademark. So when they announced that they were going to do the AEW national title and seemed to be taking credit for the lineage of the NWA national title, which currently exists and is defended and held, at least at the time, I'm not up on the latest NWA national title history, but at least as of a couple of months ago, Mike Mondo was the champion. Okay. Mm-hmm. And, NWA certain NWA members, NWA wrestlers were not happy about that, and you know, claimed it was retaliation for the trademark dispute related to Shockwave, and AEW seems to be litigating back at the NWA, and this would have been a long process. This is not a traditional lawsuit. Trademark disputes have their own special process. It's kind of a low drama thing, but it, you know, you can look at it and think it's quite dramatic, I guess. And they decided to withdraw AEW decided to withdraw their trademark because apparently they're not going to use it anyway. So that's what's happening. And I guess that's consistent with something that Tony Khan said when he spoke with Ariel Helwani, saying that he had a talk with Billy Corgan, and he said, "Oh, if you're going to use that, go ahead." Mm. Pride did not weigh in on this, by the way.
No, they definitely did not. They definitely did not. We'll see. Could, I mean, TKO.
Nor have they weighed in on Dynamite. Did you know Shockwave?
Yeah.
Okay. The big Dynamite. Let's talk about MMA in 2002. Okay.
Oh, let's.
Bob Sapp versus Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira. What a match. Kazushi Sakuraba versus Mirko Prokop. Really destroying pro wrestling. Huge stadium show in Japan. It was called Dynamite.
Yes.
In Japan. In the US, because we have to do everything differently. It was called, in the US pay-per-view, it was called Shockwave. So quite the coincidence there.
Mm-hmm. You would think that if TKO in the UFC, owning UFC, who bought Pride and probably owns those, I mean, they should. If they were going to mount an offensive, this is the time to. Can you imagine that if after all these years they went after a Dynamite?
Dream Stage thing? Entertainment. So do they own like every? Do they gain all the assets of Dream Stage Entertainment?
I don't know if I would
want all of the assets that Dream Stage Entertainment may have been involved in.
Well, I mean, who's to say? Who's to say? I don't want anyone.
There may have been certain businesses that I would not want to be associated with if I were acquiring some of the things that Dream Stage held.
True. I would say I would consult Jonathan Stone's upcoming book on Pride for that, which I'm very much looking forward to. So Shockwave, not so much. National title, sure. It's just a very strange thing. Is that I don't remember how he described it, but he said it was a different lineage. And you mentioned the TBS era, and Ivan Koloff, and Nikita Koloff, rather, and all that. And then the title, he basically said it was different. However, the title looks exactly like the one that Mike Mondo holds, I believe still holds. It is very strange. Very, just kind of like, well, I'm just going to do this. And there
to
you
be
go.
Cool, let's get into more trademark law. You can't trademark. Well, they didn't trademark. Nobody trademarks the name National Title. And I think it's such a generic name, National Title, that I don't think you could viably trademark it. Nor do I think, I think you could copyright a belt design, but I don't know that I don't think that was that issue here. And it may be too broadly used at this point anyway.
Do you think, so you're saying AEW should launch her own winged eagle version of the AEW world title?
So that brings us to another AEW lawsuit to mind. Do you remember the Luchasaurus mask lawsuit?
I do, from a few years ago. Yeah.
And that was a copyright dispute over a specific kind of design that ended up being settled, of course. But I think it would be similar to a similar type of analysis as that is like, could you just use this? This specific design, I think, you know, there would be a legal dispute about that. Yeah.
That's interesting too, because you have, obviously, you probably know AEW has the international title. And you know who else has the international title?
Probably 75 other promotions.
Total Nonstop Action, a partner of WWE.
They have an international title?
Yeah, New Japan Forever. I don't know if they still do. They have the Intercontinental title. And of course, yeah. WWE has had the Intercontinental title forever. Right. So,
like, I think these are names that are just too generic. Like if somebody else had a strong title, and New Japan wanted to oppose that for some reason, they would have a more viable argument, maybe, because strong is, I don't know, maybe even that would be tough, I think. But if you had an all elite title, and then somebody else created an all elite title, you might have some trouble there. I think it would have to be really close to somebody's IP rather than just the national title, the intercontinental title.
The world title. That should be
the world title.
Yes. Let's go with some quotable quotes. Tony Khan said he was offered a media rights deal by WBD for Ring of Honor and declined. So this was a report from Fightful that said that he was offered this and he wanted more money for it. And he essentially was asked about this indirectly on media call, kind of like it was a Ring of Honor final battle call. It was like three or four straight questions about, so he would talk and then more people ask questions, so on, and no one asked him directly, and I wanted to, did WBD directly offer you a Ring of Honor deal? And he alluded to it and so on, so he certainly hasn't denied it. So I don't know what finances he is looking for, but he is forever talked about this relationship with WBD and AEW being so important and so on. And his media partner, his primary one, offered him
a deal. Made the offer.
And he said no. So it's, I think a lot of people are like, what? Like, why wouldn't you take that? So
maybe Honor Club just has so many subscribers. I doubt that. Maybe it was an offer for AEW, for Ring of Honor to do a time buy. That's the only way I could see this making sense. Or he just made a mistake and should have accepted an offer when he didn't.
Well, I think this was David mentioned True TV had been talked about, and then that's where the AEW Dynamite replay, which I'm not sure if that's still happening or not, that went in that slot instead. So, yeah, it's his ownership of Ring of Honor fascinates me in a long time for a variety of reasons, but literally, he was offered by his main media partner. He chose not to do it. Tony Khan said he is more proud of AEW Wrestle Dream than any show since pandemic. We did not go into details as far as why that was. I mentioned this as I saw a funny quote because Tony Khan references Killer Cross and Scarlett said, it wouldn't be fair, Tony Khan, for us to join AEW right now. And Tony Khan was asked, I think, by Ariel about if he's talked to Killer Cross, and He very politely said,
he had
no,
been on Ariel Helwani's show not long before.
Correct. And he said, no, we haven't really talked. And it was one of those things. It was almost like he was surprised he was a free agent or something. It was just very, very unusual. He's like, no, maybe that'd be interesting to talk to him. At this point, I just don't think it's going to happen.
If you ask Tony Khan in public, what do you think of the wrestler Evil? What do you think he would say?
He's a tremendous talent, and he's someone that works with one of our great partners, New Japan Pro Wrestling, who they've been so great to us with with Forbidden Door every single year. Tanahashi-san is so great. They've been such a great partner over time, and they have a really good situation. I love going to Japan. Kenny Omega has been over there. He does great things for us because, you know, he would just go on and on about that and then kind of just work his way around and forget what the question was.
Exactly.
Yeah, pretty good. Tony Khan said Mercedes Moné not really making money for indie bookings. He said on WB.
She's working for free?
Apparently. Just to travel. WB counter-programming AEW said it hasn't cost us anything. And this was this one you guys talked about. AEW's closed the gap on WB in a very meaningful way. And he did not actually go to details as to what that actually meant. He had, if you remember, he had mentioned how they were gaining on SmackDown. And I cannot remember the exact quote, but this came up. And yeah, that was something that had been talked about.
I remember that. Yeah.
He had stayed away from the WB comparisons, but he threw that out there a few times of,
as a proportion of, do I not have it here? There it is. Is that happening? It doesn't look like it. I'm looking at the demo here, but you know, we can't look at Raw anymore, unfortunately, because Raw is a mess with being on Netflix now. SmackDown, it looks like the gap, and SmackDown, you can only really start the clock, I think, since they've been on USA Network, which is September 2024. And there's some seasonal bounces here, but it doesn't look like the gap that SmackDown has over Dynamite is getting smaller.
Not in a meaningful way. So I don't know what I think he just said it because from a...
Hey, if you slice time in a very specific way, you can make a lot of things true.
Yeah, I mean, if you... tennis-wise, it's not really... I don't know. I have no idea. He said, no plans for Wrestle Dream in January. I thought this is interesting that they had the first ever Wrestle Dream with New Japan in 2025 and that there was no plans for it in January. And I think that's smart because they did that. It's like, well, you have Forbidden Door 6 months, 7 months later. What's the point? I think it was overkill. And there's the crossover stuff, and then there's too much crossover stuff. It's like, what does it mean? And I think they want to put the focus on Wrestle Kingdom. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Wrestle Dynasty thing like slowly kind of go away. Put this in here. Rusev said he did not refuse to do jobs in AEW, and Tony Khan said he and Miro / Rusev at times had different visions of things. He actually opened up about that. He talked about these scrap plans of Madison Square Garden hosting the very first Dynamite. Of course, he said there was interest from someone he knows at MSG that is no longer there, and they were very interested. And then all of a sudden, poof, the interest is gone. They could not move forward. I don't know why that is. I do not know if it's due to the New York Rangers. I don't know if it's due to the New York Knickerbockers, Ringling Brothers, or a concert. Who else would have a problem that runs there on a regular basis? But anyway, they said, how would history have changed at all if the first ever Dynamite in that October night had emanated from the quote-unquote world's most famous arena versus Washington, D.C.?
They'd have made more money because it would have been a bigger venue than the Washington, what was it, the Capitol Arena? What's it called?
Capital One Arena, I believe. It would have been the same place that John Cena took his final bow, correct?
Anyway, it would have been a bigger venue, I suppose. They would have been able to fit in more. There would have been a novelty aspect of Madison Square Garden that would have probably driven a bigger gate. But, I mean, it would have just been a different detail in history. But I think there's, you know, it's should I say this? I guess I will. So I'm looking into the exclusivity that WWE asks its venues to agree to, and there's some evidence of that.
Color me intrigued. Something to look forward to for 2026.
And we've reported on this to some extent before. The Alamo Dome, and you know that the long chase I had to get some Royal Rumble 2023 records. They did have an addendum in their venue contract with the Alamo Dome that says there's an exclusivity period here for WWE. And there are other venue contracts that have similar clauses, provisions.
And finally, Tony Khan said, Cody Rhodes has been very positive in our interactions since his AEW departure. I don't know what interactions those were, but again, I keep thinking about those NDAs and this book that Punk wants to write and this book that Rhodes wants to write, and that story, those stories are coming out at some point. I know it. I absolutely know it.
Those are the kayfabe agreements.
That's right. Conflicts. We had a few.
Oh.
Yes. Nixon Newell and the Miranda Alize situation where they walked out of AEW in a collision match they were supposed to have, which resulted in high end in Maya World gaining his opportunities and eventually getting contracts. So how about that? We talked about Andrade, this WWE non-compete clause, which Tony Khan was very, when he asked about this on many calls, just said all positive things about Andrade and would not directly answer whether or not, I believe Errol asked him about this as well, did you know that he had this non-compete? And he wouldn't directly say he didn't. I don't think he did. I think he probably was just, honestly, I think it was, the situation was misrepresented to Tony Khan, I'm going to guess. And I think you guys brought this up. Could AEW lawyers have asked to see that contract or that be a conflict of interest because they're seeing a competitor's contract? But you think, I can see in one aspect, yes, but the other aspect, like, don't you have to know if, don't you kind of have to know what they're dealing with in a non-compete? Otherwise, you're taking someone at their word and you're just hoping they're right.
So here's what I think. I don't think that a wrestler who's leaving WWE can show AEW their contract without a lot of legal risk, at least, let's say that. But what I think they could do is ask WWE to give me something in writing that says what date my non-compete is up on.
Sure.
And then I can show that to AEW to give them reassurance that okay, you can put me on TV.
Mm. Do you think
it sounds like that didn't happen?
Do you think WWE has ever seen an AEW contract?
AEW seems to love confidentiality.
How would they know though? Right?
How would they know? But all I'm saying is that I think that they both have confidentiality clauses in them. That would be my expectation.
True. This is a very strange story. Former AEW coach Sarah Stock criticized the John Moxley, Darby Allin fish tank spot at WrestleDream. Later, saying corruption and negligence are running unchecked at AEW, and she named
corruption.
Yes, and negligence are running unchecked. She had taken it to X and mentioned specific people. Still has that. I think she said evidence is coming or something, but clearly her time at the company didn't end well. And there's also people worried about mental health and just what's happening. So I really don't know. It's kind of an odd story that keep bubbling up in the headlines. We had the Kevin Kelly and the Tate Twins appeal the AEW lawsuit arbitration ruling getting dismissed. So that stays in private arbitration. I don't believe that is wrapped up now.
But I don't think it's been dismissed. It's been compelled to arbitration.
Right.
Which
they have to give updates every, was it 60 days or 90
days?
Yeah,
but nothing's appeared on that docket. As far as I know, Kevin Kelly and the Tate Twins did try to appeal. They went to the, the 11th Circuit, whatever appeals court is over the Florida federal court that they were litigating this in, and the appeals court did not make a decision in their favor. So presumably if this is going to be litigated, it's being litigated in arbitration. Maybe it's just not, though, because a lot of what they were arguing is that this is unfavorable to the defendant or to the plaintiffs because they're going to have to pay. They're going to have to go do this in Florida or whatever it is. They got to do it with jams. So, maybe these litigants don't want to deal with that expense and just maybe not even pursuing this. But it's arbitration, so who knows? Secret legal matter.
Mm. Well, you found your way to find some insight into secret legal matters before. So,
that were in public courts, though.
Anything that's private can become public. It just takes a pair of eyes to see it. I just made that up. That should be in a shirt. And finally, Hangman Page calling for fans to contact WBD about controversial ICE ads on AEW Dynamite. And this was a thing earlier during this quarter because they ran on Max and TV. And it's hard in some ways because if they're directly – we've talked about this last time. The assumption, I think, I don't know how many direct advertisers AEW has for their programming. I think a lot of it is, like we talk about Progressive and State Farm, right? And all of a sudden, Progressive became this new insurance thing. It feels like it was part of a bigger broader network deal, ad buy versus that. So the ice ads, I assume it was the same thing. It's funny because I will see some things that other people don't when it comes to like HBO Max streaming in terms of ads and so on. And I don't think I ever saw an ice ad, but everyone said that they saw these when it, so I don't know if they bought them directly or if it's just more of a broad thing and whatever, but you don't hear too much about them now. I would say the ads anyway. But you had something that I don't think you would see on the other side of the aisle with WWE, with them coming out against this.
Have there been ice ads on WTV?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if there's been. And you would think you would hear about them by now, which is interesting considering the leading into the Trump administration and so on. You would think that might be more.
It has come to my attention that. And listeners have brought to my attention that my podcast host has dynamically inserted ice, I think, recruitment ad, or maybe it's like self-deport ads onto my podcast.
You're talking about John Pollock?
No. Well, no. Onto my
feed. Oh, your podcast. So, okay, gotcha.
John Pollock and Thurston. Pollock and Thurston gets published on both Pulse Wrestling and WrestleNomics, so I'm speaking about WrestleNomics only here.
Simulcast, yes.
Yes, and people have brought to my attention that there have been like ice,
really,
ads that they've been dynamically served.
Yeah, yeah, because people don't really have the option. You say, yeah, here's the ad spots and here's the here's the insertion point, right?
With my particular ad partner, who I love, they don't allow. They used to, I think, allow me to make decisions about what sort of categories I wanted to exclude, but that has since been put to a higher tier.
Oh, I see. Concerns. Certainly concerns for your podcast. I mean, your ads are unbelievable. But some concerns for 2026. These are from me. Looking ahead at the year. Dynamite Collision attendance obviously was plateauing for this past quarter, as Brandon mentioned. However, are they going to get to the point? Can they get to the point where they're getting out of these small theaters and so on? I haven't seen much of a trend to indicate it's not like they're selling out and so on. And I think you're starting to.
This is the new normal, I think, for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
Unless
and that's,
this company gets set on fire.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is going into this, these 2 years, especially 2027, is very important. So we'll see what happens there. And what would make poor people come to shows? And I think the environment is a big deal with it. I think it's, they simply are just these stars who are great in-ring entertainers and wrestlers and all that,
and
the wrestling's there.
Yeah.
It's not a show. It's not showy enough to make them people want to go in bigger numbers, I guess. And whereas WWE, they treat it as more like a concert. They're super hot, obviously, but it's two different products completely, and you can tell obviously the difference. And I think it's concerning, especially, you know, with how much people are willing to spend on concerts and events and experiences these days. There's something that's missing there, and they've not been able to unlock that yet. And that hot feeling they had when they first started and kind of ran through for a while has just really kind of dissipated, and it exists. And that's with a challenger brand, you have to take some chances. And it's good they're not, you know, they're. From my perspective, it's good they're not just saying, well, we're still going to keep stubbornly running these big venues anyway because we want to have the prestige. They're saying we're running smaller theaters and so on. So it's a give or take, but that's a concern because you plateau, but next thing you know, all of a sudden you start sinking and it becomes the place to not be versus the place to be.
I think it's harder than ever to pop a territory, if you will. I think in this environment, and exceedingly so as technology continues to, you know, expand and fragment. I think it was one thing to do it in the territory days when you had a smaller but regional audience, you know, the smoke-filled arena days, when things were in bingo halls and things of that nature. And it was another thing to do it in the 90s when there were fewer media options and you could, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin could show up and set the business on fire for a few years in the late 90s when, you know, I had 36 channels on the dial. And in the United States, from that point onward, we really didn't. I mean, there's Cena and Batista in 2005 and 6 that I think give a little bump there. From that point onward up to 2022, WWE doesn't really have any of that. You know, AEW gets hold of this alternative wrestling brand and all this talent, and I think they make a lot of use of disgruntled wrestling fans and wrestlers and provide a really strong alternative that there was strong demand for, and they get to create a company out of that that's quite possibly financially viable here. Now WWE at the same time, you know, into 2022 finally got relief from their creative situation, and, you know, I think more stars and could flourish, and their business picked up. And I think it's, we're seeing a lot of signs that maybe it's sort of plateauing, but it's plateauing at this elevated state. I guess what I'm getting to is, I think it's with the numerous entertainment options and this incredible war for everybody's attention from all different directions, including this podcast itself. I think it's just so hard for a thing to become more popular than it is. This is not the same game that, you know, Steve Austin was playing, or that Hulk Hogan was playing, you know, or the Von Erichs were playing in terms of trying to set a territory on fire. It's a much harder game with many, many, many more options for entertainment. So that I think the hurdle it has to be cleared to turn AEW's attendance from 3,000 to 5,000 and 6,000 again is very difficult. And I think the reason why it went from 5,000 down to 3,000 is largely Punk's departure and maybe to some extent Cody's departure, who's definitely been a big benefit for WWE in the offsetting time. It's just so hard now, I think, you know, and the hurdle to clear is so difficult. But they have installed themselves and entrenched themselves into a spot that's going to make them probably viable for the foreseeable future. You know, media rights renewals pending.
Yeah. So yeah, that, of course, the WBD sell progress and partnership in the March of 2027. So we'll see how things go with Netflix, and if there's any Paramount lawsuits, or we'll see kind of how everything goes. I have a hot take on the future of Collision, and really kind of your first point you were talking about with it's hard to pop the territory and so on. I was looking at the Collision numbers for last week and just kind of in general, and Collision's really kind of starting to give off that Rampage vibe, and it has for a little while, in terms of just it doesn't feel necessary. Like this past Saturday show did not feel that necessary or must watch. I think that's a tough road to be on. The Christmas Collision was excellent, but that's, you know, one of every, I don't know how many, and there's a lot of collisions I'll watch and we'll just be like, do we need to see this? I think we're at the point, actually I think we're well past the point, and kind of alluding to what you were saying, where only the number one company in wrestling can justify having two weekly TV shows. I don't think I think TNA certainly can't. I think there's a point where it's like, what are, you know, for WBD or whoever, like, what are we paying for fans? Why do we need to watch this? We don't watch the Focus and so on. And you kind of just widen that net. I just wonder if when this last deal happened, Rampage got taken away, and so did Battle of the Belts, and I think, you know, they flew a little too close to the sun with too much AEW. I would not be surprised to see Collision not be part of the next round of renewals if WWE keeps them, whatever format.
Collision?
I just don't think it's necessary. And I mean,
are you fear-mongering the cancellation of Collision?
I'm being realistic. And I wonder if that would be better if you focused on a expand Dynamite to 3 hours if you need to, you know, and just, I just look at these shows, and they're just, it feels like, and I watch those Rampage shows and it's like, why am I watching this? It doesn't mean anything, you know? And I get that same feeling with Collision. I think
that's
other fans
feel
are
wrestling.
Yeah, that's very true. But you know, with WWE, they have the advantage because obviously it's the Raw and SmackDown, it's two separate rosters, they're big stars in both, and you feel like there's different different things going on in each that you kind of have to see, and they all kind of come together at the PLEs. With AEW, just it doesn't feel like a lot of attention is being paid to that. And then you have the Ring of Honor aspect as well. I would not be surprised to see that not exist. And we'll see kind of what the viewership is and all that. I just don't think there's that many people that are significantly watching on WBD based on I think it's very hard to find. You're not gonna have a lot of people stumble upon it on HBO Max the way that they have things set up. You're just not, and it's just not a lot of crossover to say for these different audiences that are non-wrestling to say you gotta watch these shows. And I think it's just spread out a little bit too thin. And I'm interested to see what happens in 2026 with Collision numbers, and again, just that feeling of is it more like Rampage than it is Dynamite, which it started out closer to be, much different era with Punk and everything. I don't know. I just I, that's my as I was brushing my teeth la teeth last night, thinking about these stupid things. This is kind of what I was thinking about.
I guess it's a largely an economic calculation of, and it's harder. We just don't have the data to answer this question well, with Max making everything more complicated, and I suppose big data plus panel is a real effect that even if you which is separate from the popularity question, right? This is an economic question, and this economic question, big data plus panel is the currency, So if that's down 20%. That's 20% less that I can satisfy ad impressions. So the question is, could I replace Collision if I'm a programmer? Can I replace Collision with something more profitable? Maybe. I guess we don't have the data to answer that. At least with Max being in the dark. Can I just plug in Big Bang Theory or the rerun movie that's always airing on TNT, and can I get a similar enough rating that's going to be a lot cheaper for me, probably? And maybe we don't need Collision. Maybe I'll renew Dynamite, and that's enough. That's giving me the unique viewers that AEW gives me, and maybe I don't need the redundant 2 hours that I can get similar value. From plugging in Transformers.
Yeah, one of the other properties that WBD the studios have, where they were doing the Marvel movies, airing those forever. And some of those numbers, especially when people talk about, Big Bang Theory lead-ins and so on, it is wild to me that many people watch reruns on TBS or TNT, considering how many different places that you can watch and get them. I just again, if we're right at that, what, 300,000-ish range or so on for panel plus data or something like that. So, I mean, what are we looking at here? Yeah, so
315.
315.
Well, that was in Q3, but let's look at the number of viewers. 274 for Q4 for
Yeah.
Collision.
I mean, tell me a movie can't get that. I those are things I just look at, and just from a not a, a portending doom, but just a just realistically, why would they want that if they can get something else and again, Saturday night is hard, right? You're in college football, you have other sports year round. That's just tough. If they want to keep a second show, just move it to Thursdays. Do a back-to-back night thing, go up against TNA, and see what you can do. That'd be, I mean, I guess that's the last result. I mean, even though Tony Khan said that, Zaslav wanted a Saturday show, I mean, if they had the option to move to Thursdays, I'd just say do it. I don't see them getting any better on Saturdays, and it potentially can save, make the show feel more pertinent to back-to-back nights. Oh, I think it might be worth looking at. But that's just something I was just thinking about last night. Viewership trends, as we mentioned, and also, how are they going to grow ancillary areas, or are they? This is something, David had talked about this, and I think it was more not wish casting, but kind of just openly opining that they were going to try to reinvest and bring in, with this new TV deal, bring in more. Front office people that have experiences in other areas, marketing, merchandise, and so on, and really just try to kind of bolster from within. And I guess they've had a couple hirings here or there, but I don't, you don't, they're still using pro wrestling tees for merch, and they have different, you just don't, you don't ever see,
Do
like, go ahead.
you think they what is the nature? What do we know about the nature of that relationship with Pro Wrestling Tees and AEW?
I don't know. I think they obviously they do all the t-shirts. They just released their bestseller list and think the top 25, I think 21 or so were AEW talents who you would probably expect. They handle some of their other merchandising as well.
Does AEW own some of wrestling tees?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think it probably just is a very beneficial partnership, right? And they, yeah, I mean, I assume if they were to leave Pro Wrestling Tees, that'd be a huge detriment to PWT's business. But I mean, the merchandise, I never hear positive things about.
Sounds like the relationship between WBD and AEW, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
With AEW in the opposite role.
Yeah. I just don't hear a lot about, when I would go to, AEW shows in Boston, just, it's not like a ton of merch and so on. There's just, it doesn't seem like the merchandise compared to, WWE, and you have to compare them. They're hooked up with Fanatics, which is a huge benefit for them. They're a big part of WWE world, kind of keeping in the pop culture mainframe. But just some designs and people wearing stuff out or so on, I don't get that same feeling. The video games thing is super interesting to me as well. And we talked about previously, Tony kind of brought this up about how he was surprised by the question, I think, on a media call. And he just kind of said, we're going to eventually get to doing something. And I had listened and taken some advice from people and so on and so forth. And he admitted it's not his area of expertise, which is good because there are people out there that do this. The video game is such a key connection point with young kids, right? And I'm so amazed at the amount of indie wrestlers that came in I don't know how many past years, their gateway was WB video games. And that's how they got hooked in. And that's how they said, I should go train in doing this. It's a completely random than when I was growing up, when like you'd actually watch the product and that's how you would say, oh, I think I might want to do this, right? That's how so many people got in the business. But the video games front, it's like they've stalled. And I don't know why that is, because such a key component connecting younger people and your future fans. I don't know.
Was that the video game a disappointment? Is that definitive at this point?
That's what I've heard. Yeah. Our Brian Rose did a review on it and he plays a ton of games and he's just like, yeah, it was okay in some spots, but it seems to be a consistent theme that, and there was not much of a defense when a lot of this criticism of the game was coming out, and it just seems it did not hit. So I'm just those areas of like, you have all this money, this is the time to kind of really reinvest. And how do you get younger people in, especially considering they have a TV 14 product, that's a rating, and they say that family friendly when it comes to ticket pricing. The product is adult, and they have blood, they have violence, and so on. You think that would definitely be attractive to a good population of kids who seem to want to do things that are, I don't know, counterculture, but taboo or stuff that they shouldn't be watching. Reach them every single way you can, and they really haven't done that. And I'm curious if that changes at all or so on, if there's a different partnership they can make. I don't know. It's an area I just think that tends to get overlooked. But look, UFC did the same thing as well. UFC's merch is terrible, and it has been awful for quite some time. Dana White, years ago, he never really kind of admitted weaknesses, but he said our merchandise, he said, we just don't pay attention to it. And this was before the TKO era, but their video games are big. So I don't know.
I See, get a Pride Fighting.
Pride Fighting, champion. Yes. You can buy a shirt.
Pay tribute to the greatest fighting organizations of all time. We're browsing UFCshop.com right now. UFCstore.com, excuse me. Speaking of partnerships, I don't know if this has ever been looked at. You know this, there's this lawsuit involving Mike Tyson and Ric Flair.
Yeah, yes. Heard about this? Very much so, yes.
Have you read the complaint, the 76-page complaint?
I have not.
Let's read some of it. Who is this Bronstein? Have you heard of this guy? I think it's Chad Bronstein, who's a defendant in this case.
He's the guy with this the Woo energy, and also with he's this guy gets him. Was he Flair's business manager, or like he seemed to be his concierge to a lot of these deals, right?
He's involved in a lot of exciting things. If you look at his LinkedIn, he says he's a founder and he's a entrepreneur. He's involved. He's the co-founder of Real American Beer. Mm-hmm. He's a co-founder and CEO of Real American Freestyle. So he's being sued here. I don't know the ins and outs of this, but we do see a paragraph 136 in this lawsuit coming from Mike Tyson and Ric Flair. Are there other plaintiffs here? something called Karma Holdco. They're suing Chad Bronstein and a few other people. Anyway, let's cut to the chase. At paragraph 136, it says Bronstein further unilaterally negotiated multi-million dollar sponsorships for Woo Energy, including but not limited to a $2 million sponsorship agreement with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Wow. Cleveland Cavaliers were tied up in Woo Energy. And a 1.5 million, a number, 1.5 million sponsorship agreement with All Elite Wrestling League.
Oh, boy. The league.
Henceforth, AEW. And then there's some other numbers here that are probably less interesting.
A lot of Ohio-based organizations, which is interesting. And if, of course, you remember when people were complaining about Ric Flair, Tony and his Woo Energy, Tony Khan said essentially the Woo Energy partnership is paying for Flair.
Don't worry about it. It's not costing us anything.
Yep.
$1.5 million is what this lawsuit says that partnership was worth, which is a number, which is a rare thing in AEW business.
How about that?
It could be disputed. I mean, this is coming from the plaintiffs.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's surprised in that headline. That story came out.
An alleged, we could say this, an alleged $1.5 million deal.
True.
For Woo Energy.
Yes.
Allegedly. Allegedly.
Allegedly. Well, it certainly doesn't cost $1.5 million to subscribe to WrestleNomics, as we know. $5 a month, you can get all the action via his Patreon account or Substack as well, correct?
Yes.
$10 a month gets you...
No.
Not
only
anymore.
Only the $5 tier. And you get access to all of the TV ratings reports, and you get access to some monthly reports as well around live events, YouTube, who's having the most matches. There's this UK wrestler who's had over 300 matches. We're reporting on that soon. You get access to these KPIs that are talked about on this podcast.
You know, was interesting. You mentioned the other day about the matches per year and some of the day you're running. I was thinking the other day when I was actually in the sitting in a grocery store parking lot, and I was walking to my car, and I was thinking, I wonder who had the most matches. A correlation or a chart of like who had the most matches in WWE and AEW for the year compared to, like, as you look at that, like, compare their stardom, right? So, like, who had the most matches? I'm just, there's such a, you have your upper class in these wrestling organizations now with a lot of part timers, and the part timers don't wrestle that often. However, you have a lot of who is carrying the weight, you know, when it comes to the in-ring on a week-to-week basis. And I was curious to kind of look at that to think, WWE or AEW,
Moxley is number one with 52 in 2025. Okay. Kenosuke Takeshita is number two with 49. Roderick Strong, Bandido, Daniel Garcia, who's that? Kyle Fletcher, Claudio Castagnoli, Mark Briscoe, Mike Bailey.
What's this Don Callis family entry? How does that work?
I think this is the number of times that stable is appearing in results.
I
so
see.
It's not a person, obviously.
I'm surprised that's not leading the list.
And in 2025, we've got, this includes NXT stuff, Roxanne Perez at number one with 66 matches in 2025. LA Knight, with 65 is number two. Probably leading the main roster, right? Penta. When did he join WWE?
That was last year, right? Yeah, it was last year.
Javon Evans, Jey Uso, Shiloh Hill, Kendall Gray, Sol Ruka, a lot of NXT. Miles Bourne.
Yeah, Penta debuted the week after the Netflix debut, so he's been there most of the year.
So, okay.
So this is including all NXT guys. Shiloh, so it's including NXT house shows and all that.
Yeah.
But what you don't see here is...
Should we look till we get to some main roster names here? Raquel Rodriguez. Is Tank Ledger a main roster person?
NXT.
How much I know. Lyra Valkyria, certainly some of the year.
Clyde Jordan, Laney... I mean...
Dominic Mysterio, the workhorse with 76 matches.
46.
Excuse me. Jey Uso, we didn't, just to emphasize, 58. Yep. He's way up there. But looking back down... We got Jimmy Uso with a mere 46.
Stephanie Vaquer, but you don't see among this group the Punks, the Reigns, The Cody Rhodes. How many does Cody Rhodes have on this list? There's CM Punk 37 matches. Cody Rhodes
is number 58. Mm-hmm. Remember, this includes NXT people. He's number 58 with 36 matches.
Yeah. I find that just so interesting. That's
less than a match a week.
Yeah. I find that very, very interesting in how the in-ring now.
Punk almost the same with 37.
Yeah. You don't need these guys every single week. This goes, you know, the whole house show thing and wrestling on TV and all this. I mean, this, of course, does include appearances, but it's, I find these right. things fascinating.
This doesn't include, like, I showed up on Raw and I did a 15-minute promo. If you didn't do a match, you're not counted in this listing.
Yeah. Because if these guys can get away with, what is Roman Reigns on this list?
How many matches did he have? Seven.
Seven. I mean, this is tremendous. But, I mean, he's making and Santos Escobar, seven matches as well. He's making these I think these part-time deals are a big detriment. And I think guys don't leave, and it makes it tougher for younger guys to get their opportunities.
That's what Bron Breakker's saying.
Yeah, it's he's 100% accurate. And the correlation with money and draws to
he had 45 matches. He's working hard. He's number 27.
Yeah. And I wonder like back in the glory days, how I would assume like a guys like Flair and Hogan and so on, they were working a lot more. Cause again, it was a much different business. Even Austin during his era was Austin's big run.
Let's go to 1999.
Let's go.
Kane, 196 matches. That's how it's done. All right. Let's go to the '80s. What's a prime year for the '80s when they're really busy?
1987, 1988.
Jim Duggan, 191 matches. Wow. Okay. I think Hogan had some heavier years. Like, what does he do in 85? Greg Valentine, 237. Wow. Now remember this cage match is maybe incomplete, but I think they've been filling out this record over the years. But yeah, I don't know. What's Hogan got in 85? 129 matches in 85 are accounted for. Hmm. Yeah, it might be incomplete. Don't yell at me.
Yeah. Huh. That's funny. I may play around with this number. It's fun stuff. Anyway, fun with numbers. That's what we do here. And you have more fun with numbers at WrestleNomics. You can hear Brandon on Pollock and Thurston every Wednesday, approximately 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, depending on the week. And John's very busy schedule. Anything else to plug?
No, I don't know. You can find me at a...
Post-wrestling, of course.
At a courthouse near you.
Yeah.
Most of my writing now is post-wrestling. Doing a lot of collaborative work with Jason Unperser, who I say, hey, are you busy? Do you want to write something up on this filing? So that's been helpful. He's been helping me out a lot as I'm not a lawyer, but I play one on the internet.
That's right, fellow New England guy, correct? Jason is
Massachusetts. Yeah,
yeah, used to work with Nesson, I believe.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I see you.
Yeah, a real journalist.
That's right. I see you, Jason. I see you. Fellow, so I'm wearing my Patriot shirt and so on, specifically for this podcast.
Speaking of which, yes. Since this is an AEW podcast, the Bills versus the Jaguars. You don't think we're going to not mention that, okay? Mm. Bills versus the Jaguars playoff game this Sunday, I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to bet against Josh Allen. He's really good, as you well know. He's very good. He has that ability to lift his team up. But this, again, this is every year in the postseason, the past few years, he's come just this close, but it's always been the big blocker in his way. Patrick Mahomes.
Well, they're not around.
That's right.
He can't lose to the Chiefs in the playoffs if the Chiefs aren't in the playoffs.
Correct, but he can lose to a different team. Could Trevor Lawrence, this be his time? And could it be Drake May's time? Who knows? I mean, there's also the Denver Broncos. A lot of people are overlooking.
I swear to God, if I have to live through another New England Patriots dynasty, I don't know what I'll do.
No, you should start planning because it's going to happen. Sorry. It was the last time is here. You know, the last time is now.
I can't make any promises for the drywall in my home this weekend. Okay.
I like how you get really passionate about this. You don't watch a ton of in-ring wrestling anymore, but you do enjoy the NFL football.
Not and, really. I watch no. it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's good.
I did throw something across the room when it became clear that the Bills were not going to beat the Chiefs last year in the playoff game. When the last moment of hope had left and gone down the drain, I don't know what it was. It was not something heavy. Nothing was damaged, okay?
Yeah.
But I did throw something across the room.
Was it like Excel sheets, a folder of documents or something like that? You just tossed it and it flew out in the air like a
No, it
movie?
was something soft. It might have been like my Bill's hat or something.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff. Well, prepare to do that again. But thank you so much for stopping by once again. I always enjoy our talks and enjoy this one as well. Bran Thurston, thanks so much.